Coming to you from Toronto, Canada, this is Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to this show.
Hey, welcome back, and this is the Classic Camera Revival for June 2015, and today we are going to do it like Paddington Bear and do it ourselves. Yes, that's right. A lot of times these old cameras need a little bit of work to get going, and if you don't want to take it to a wonderful shop named Camtech up on Concession Street in Hamilton, there's a lot of stuff that you can actually do to repair or modify these cameras yourself in your own home using the most simplest of tools. So we're going to start off with the most complex procedure. Now, we all recognize the famous shutter sounds out of the Canons.
Oh, that's not too bad, but it gets worse.
They're the worse. Definite squeak to that shutter. Now, a lot of times people love it. I have it on my AE1 program, and it's absolutely, it's unique. It's endearing. But, I mean, sometimes you'll actually want to...
It's very Canon.
Yes. But there is a way to reduce it, and I'm looking at the parts here, and one of the things is something that I recognize from my other hobby that involves shooting, and that's gun oil. I use that to make sure the lock on my round bass musket keeps shooting fine. So, Mike, take it away. What do you need to de-squeak one of these cannons? Now, we're using a Canon AE1 as an example here.
Yeah, this one's the Canon AE1 program, which is the latter model of the Canon AE1. This is when they started to get a lot more automatic, because the original AE1 is very simple. It was shutter speed priority, so set the shutter, camera would set the aperture. And AE1, you get it. A1, you get it. I believe, I think I've heard that you've even gotten the shutter squeal on the pretty much the entire A series line. And this one's not too bad. I had the A1, such as the shutter sound that you hear at the beginning of the podcast, is taken on an A1. And that wonderful sound, I had just actually de-squealed. I threw the motor drive on it, and it sounds really nice. But, wow, that one actually sounded pretty good. There, that was the typical Canon squeal that you hear. All that is what happens is there's a lubricant that's on the mirror brake. And what happens is that lubricant wonderfully dries out. And the longer it's been dried out, the worse the squeal. So let's get to the basics. First thing you need is a small Phillips screwdriver. Don't go with those wonderful YouTube videos that show either using a knife to remove the screws or WD-40. Yeah.
Yes, proper tools are needed. Yeah. Please.
There's videos on using WD-40 in the camera, and I can't stress enough, WD-40 is used for removing rusted bolts. It's used for de-squeaking hinges. Keep it as far away from cameras as possible. It is a penetrating fluid, and as such, it gets to spots you don't want it.
Yes, so, use it to clean gunpowder off your muskets.
One thing we should say, maybe before any of us get too far into what we're doing, working on cameras, you are doing this at your own risk. It's always possible to screw something up. So if you try this and it doesn't work, please don't sue us because we don't have any money. So, you know, you need to, you know, go into this as a grown-up, clean work surface, have a container to put the screws and little bits and pieces, because little bits and pieces will fall on the carpet and be impossible to find.
Yeah. So one of the things that you need for this is a hypodermic needle. Now, unlike if you're doing developing where you have your syringe that's used for as a medicine dropper, this one, 100%, you need the actual needle on it. And you're probably looking at about a 2-inch needle, or, well, I guess 1.5-inch needle, because it's really got to get into a small space, and it's pretty far up in the camera. And always keep the cap on up until the point that you're going to use it, because it's a hypodermic needle. You can easily stab yourself with this. And since you're using oil, like a gun oil, this stuff is extremely toxic. Keep it away from kids. Keep it away from food. Keep it away from drinks. And above all, keep it out of your body. The other thing you need is a fine tip Phillips screwdriver. As John mentioned, a clean work surface. I usually work on a white pad. And the reason I use a white pad is it's a lot of contrast, because when you're putting screws down, you can easily see them. So I'll get started. As you heard, the squeal is pretty pronounced on this. So I've got the base plate off.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I do have the base plate off. I made sure that I've already done that, because there's no need for anybody to be listening to me sitting there unscrewing the base plate.
We just wanted to make sure that people knew what the first step was.
Yes, yes. Unscrew the base plate. Then you take one, possibly two drops of oil, just dip it in the cap, and when you pull the oil into the syringe, you're pulling the tiniest amount possible. I mean, you're basically almost getting nothing in the syringe at all. It's just enough that you can get it into the mirror break. So, in the lens, the actual mount of the lens, right in behind where it goes in through the body, there's a specific spot. If it doesn't go in all the way, don't force it. You just find it, and there it went.
No violence.
It should go in super easy. Everybody, if you want, catch a quick photo of it.
You're listening online, but we'll post some pictures in the show notes of what we're doing.
So, a quick little squirt of oil into the camera. I'm going to let it sit for a sec. Let's cock it. And fire the shutter. And it's still there. Well, we'll do it again. Alright, so the squeal is still a little bit too present for my liking. So let's just add a tiny bit more oil.
Now, the things you need to do this, the precision screwdriver set and the gun oil is available here in Canada at Canadian Tire. The hypodermic needle, you'll need to probably go to a drugstore.
I bought mine from Starkman's. Now, when I walked in, I asked for a hypodermic needle. They don't judge, which is really nice, but the look that I got, you could kind of wonder, so why is he buying a hypodermic needle with a really long tip? Because I actually walked in and I asked for a B12 intramuscular syringe tip.
And oh.
And the reason why you want the intramuscular is it's longer. So right. I've just applied the second coat of oil, and let's take a listen. Still there. Persistent today.
Well, like any sort of stuff that you do at home, it's not 100% perfect. I mean, none of us here are professionals in any way, shape, or form. But the nice thing about this is that it's a fairly non-destructive thing. You're not disassembling anything major. You're just taking a base plate off the camera.
Basically, so, that's it.
So, we're just gonna add. So as long as you just... take it slow, do it right.
Don't force anything.
Exactly, no violence.
Yeah, there's no need to be forcing anything on this. If you have to force it, chances are it's probably a little bit worse than just a squeal. Ooh, that sounded really good.
That sounds promising.
Oh yeah, now you can hear it.
Oh wow, much better, much better.
Very clean.
So, I mean, granted, there's probably been a little tiny bit of editing, because who really wants to sit there and listen to me de-squeal this with the long pauses in between and multiple squealing, but you can hear it now. This has literally only been about 5-6 minutes, and it is perfect, absolutely perfect. It's like something right out of the factory. That's it. Squeal gone.
And at no time did Mike have to reach into his wallet and pay an expensive repair person.
And just incidentally, at the end of it, because you did put a little bit of oil into the cap, you don't want to turn it over and have it all spill out. Usually just get a small bit of napkin, soak up what was left of the oil, and dispose of it properly. And again, make sure cap goes back on that needle, because you do not want to drop it. You do not want to step on it. You don't want it to end up anywhere into your body, because yeah, it's got a pretty toxic oil. Now, there are some that use a silicone-based oil. It's probably a good choice to use as well. Sewing machine oil, that's another one that you can use. But again, do not use thicker-based oils. WD-40, penetrating fluid, brake clean, olive oil. Keep away from those. Olive oil isn't too bad, but I wouldn't recommend it, because
it's organic and will go rancid.
Yeah, exactly. It's more designed for cooking and eating. Try to keep it away from your gear. But mm-hmm. I can't deny that I have used it on. I used it on my Argus C3 when I did the repair on that one. I did use some olive oil just on the rangefinder heat, just to free that one up. I've actually got a video, or not a video, but I do have a blog on that. Plus, I also have a blog on a Canonet QL25 for unsticking the shutter. And sure enough, that exact same technique that I used on the QL25, I used on Donna's Olympus 35SP to unstick her shutter. And it works perfect. I've got no problems with it. A little bit of alcohol, Q-tip, and patience, and you're good to go.
Okay, now, if you remember back in our February episode, where I talked about the Kodak Hawkeye flash, and it was mentioned that you can actually flip the lens. And so, now I also mentioned that, hey, I don't really like that look, but you know what? Let's give it a shot. So, this is actually really great because it's a non-destructive way to modify your camera, to just give that, just really exaggerate the look of the single element lens. All you really need for it is a Phillips screwdriver. Now, I am using a number one Phillips screwdriver here. So the first step is you will remove the film back, and then when you have the camera here, you'll look down into the towards the lens. You'll see two screwdrivers on either side. Basically, you take those out, and the entire film assembly pops off, and right in the front will be the lens element. Now, the lens is mounted in my case, it's a plastic, but might be metal, round hole. You can just, it just pulls right out, nice and easy. Now, one thing you might need to do, and I had to on mine, is that there were little tiny nubs on it, and I just took my Swiss Army knife, very MacGyver-like. In fact, it's the exact same Swiss Army knife that MacGyver used, same model. You just carefully shave that out, shave those off without cutting yourself.
Always a good thing.
Oh, yeah. And then you just will, and you'll see the way it's, when it's incorrectly, the lens is recessed into the holder. You just have to flip it back upside down. Now, you just flip it the opposite way that it was in. And then, now, without the nubs, it won't really hold well into the holder. So you just have to sort of place it down onto the shutter assembly, take the whole thing, make sure that it's aligned correctly, and just slide it back on. And then it's just a simple matter of putting the screws back in, and that's it. And the best part is, if you don't like the look, you can just repeat the process, and it's all back to normal. So we'll have some examples and some photos of all it's laid out, and some examples of what the images look like on the show notes, definitely.
It's certainly on my list of things to try this summer. I've got a Brownie Hawkeye downstairs, and I'm going to try flipping the lens, because I have a bunch of the Lens Baby brand of lenses, and this does the same kind of thing, but this is a lot less expensive than Lens Baby. Okay, Donna and I are going to talk about a process called hand tinting. This is something that we both love doing. This is a process that dates back almost to the dawn of photography, because, of course, The color photography was not available until later on in the 19th century and was not really practical until the 20th century. And hand tinting is a technique where you will take a black and white darkroom print, and by using what are called photo oils and photo pencils, you can apply color to the print and get a hand tint. And this technique dates back to even the daguerreotype back in the you know, the 1840s, 1850s, where people wanted a little bit of color in a picture. So they might have a bit of lip color, a bit of
hair color,
rosy cheeks, just to make people look a bit more lifelike. And the process continued to be popular well into the 20th century. But then when you had films like Kodachrome, etc., come in and made color film more practical for the average person, the technique went away. But you can still get materials today, and it's a lot of fun. I tried it first, then I showed it to Donna. Donna, well, tell us, did you enjoy your first time doing it?
I sure did. I thought it was really amazing. Taking a piece of black and white photo paper and putting the image that you want on the photo, and then being able to color it the way that you want it to be, I thought it was really, really neat to be able to sit there and do that.
The one thing I liked about it is that unlike some processes where like you do something wrong and you're stuck, with the hand tinting, if you put some tint down, you don't like it, you can use an eraser and bring it right back off.
Which so is really neat.
It's like having a backspace or a delete key in an analog process.
Control Z.
Control Z. Or Control Z if you're south of the border. But we say it the proper way up here.
Or Photoshop layers.
Or Photoshop layers. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is you're putting some pigment on with a piece of cotton batten, and you rub it into the print, and then with another piece of cotton batten, you take off as much
as you can,
you want.
Yeah.
And it's one of those processes where it's almost driven by more how much you take away than how much you leave there.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. One thing I liked about it was the, this might sound a bit strange, is the smell of the pigment. Because it's an oil paint, Marshall Photo Oils. It's oil-based.
The Marlene. I love the smell of the Marlene.
The Marlene has, lemon. I love the smell of Marlene in the morning.
that is truly the one thing that you can't get with digital, is that...
The smell of Marlene.
It's just this whole process that is so physical, right? There's smells to it. You don't smell the digital sensor.
No.
And if you do smell the digital sensor, there's something wrong.
Or that beautiful smell of a hard drive going up smoke.
Yep.
Been there, done that.
So now the Marshall Photo Oil kits are still available online. I think Freestyle might have them.
Yeah, I think
The problem is some of the materials, they don't like to ship across the border, the Marlene. Which is a sort of a media surface preparation layer. It makes it a bit easier to use. However, I found that if you use the Ilford Art 300 paper that we talked about in a previous episode, you don't need the Marlene for that. It works fine.
Really?
Yeah. What?
When you're doing a hand tinted print, you need to use the right kind of paper. RC paper
doesn't work very well. No.
Needs to be fiber based, either the matte. Or I find the R300 is just far and away the best.
There needs to be some sort of texture for it, just like painting a wall or repainting something. You want to sand it down a little to get a texture for something for the pigment to grab onto.
No, we're not saying you should. Please don't sand down your photos.
That's a bad idea.
That you did not hear that from us.
Then again, that might be an interesting look if you.
We're not going to go there.
Up with a little bit of that'd be pretty interesting.
Okay, well, knock yourself out, Mike. But I found that the great thing about the hand tinting is you're not trying to fool anyone into thinking it's a regular color picture. It has its own kind of look.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
And I say embrace the look. You can even go wild. I did a print a few years ago, a photograph I took at Pompeii, black and white picture, and I made the sky orange and the stones purple just because I wanted to.
I remember that. Yes, actually, and that's the first one you used to show me when you were teaching me. It looked very,
and so
very cool.
It's just another way to express yourself and to have some fun. And if you really want, it's a great way to do spot color, unless you hate spot color, like me.
No, it is really fun to get into, very relaxing. It is a fantastic hobby for those of you that like to paint. It is a very different, unique way of painting. I recommend that you give it a try. You never know, you may actually really enjoy it, and it'll become one of your favorite hobbies, as it is mine and John's.
No, photography has been around for quite a while, and surprisingly, some of the early equipment that dates to probably the 1880s, 1890s, are still available today. And one of the things that a lot of wet plate photographers that I know love to do is to take these old brass lenses and mount them onto their large format cameras. Now, when I was up at Photostock last year, I had a chance to try out wet plate, and the lens I used was an old Darlot from the 1890s. Now, John here has managed to put one onto his Speed Graphic. We'll get more into large format photography in our September episode, but John, take it away.
Okay. Now, I'll be honest, when you first mentioned the DIY topic, I was a bit nervous because I'm not a DIY person. Like, for me, a successful DIY project is one where I have the same number of fingers at the end as going in.
That's always a plus.
So I was thinking, okay, what could I do? And then this idea came to me. What I have in my hands is my Speed Graphic. It's a 4x5 camera, uses sheet film, although if you look around, there are roll film adapters for it. Mm-hmm. And it has a removable lens board, which means it's very easy to swap out lenses.
Yeah.
Now, one great thing about the Speed Graphic, now this is as opposed to a Crown Graphic, we'll get into the differences later, is that for most 4x5 cameras, the shutter is built into the lens. It'll be like a leaf shutter and a lens. And I do have lenses for this camera that work that way. However, the Speed Graphic also has a honking large focal plane shutter at the back of the camera. Because of that focal plane shutter, that means that you can use lenses that do not have built-in shutters.
Which a lot of the brass lenses don't, because they didn't need them when they were first made.
Exactly. So the lens I have on this camera, this is what's called a Petzval lens, made by the Frederick J. Taylor. I'm doing this from memory. Company that's, this dates from England in the 1860s or so.
Nice.
And the Petzval lens, this was like the cutting edge technology in lenses back in the day. Mm-hmm. Because before the Petzval lenses, the original lenses were very, very small aperture, like we're talking like f11, f16, f22, and that's fully open. And if you look at the film technology of the day, the daguerreotypes, it made for very, very long exposures. And this was a trick. Like, if you're doing portrait photography, there's a reason why people in early portraits look so solemn. They had to basically adopt an expression and hold it for a minute or more.
That, and they probably had a brace on the back of their head.
Yes, yes, yep. You know, photography bondage, 19th century style. I don't know where that came from, and I'll put it right back, I promise. But now the Petzval lens allowed for a much faster aperture. This one, it doesn't have any markings on it. Its aperture is around f7 or so. Now, in the days like today, when, like, you know, a typical normal lens is f1.8, 1.4, or 0.95 if you're Voigtlander or Leica, f7 doesn't sound like much. Mm-hmm. F7 doesn't sound like much. But back in the day, it was incredible. I have to use this at F7 only because it uses the to stop it down, you use what are called waterhouse stops. These are basically little plates of metal with circles in them, and you drop them in for various stops. I don't have any of those. I could probably make some.
Yeah,
yeah, you could probably get them.
Sheet of brass, as long as it's blackened on one side. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing about the Petzval lens shooting wide open is you get a beautiful swirly pattern around the exterior of the image. And that's why people love Petzval lenses. In fact, Lomo, I think it's the Lomo company.
Yep. Lomography,
they, Lomography, they have started making Petzval lenses in mounts for, you know, modern DSLRs like Nikon, Canon.
Nikon and Canon are the two that they've produced. I've always wanted to try one, but just they're fairly expensive.
$400 or $500, $600.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about that.
Yeah,
that's a little steep.
Yeah. Well, you can get
I have a couple things that I sort of need to get before I start buying more camera gear.
But and the Petzval lenses themselves now, they're highly sought after. So they're, you know, and they're collectors. Like, this is 1860s. So I think I paid a couple hundred pounds, British pounds, for this one. But there's another kind of lens that you can get called a process lens that also varying ages, fairly inexpensively, that can sometimes have that Petzval look, quite often for slide projectors or magic lantern lenses. Yeah. And they don't have the shutters either, but of course you use them on a speed graphic with the focal plane shutter, you're all set. What you have to do is make your own lens board.
Yeah.
But it's basically just you're drilling a hole in the middle of a piece of wood or metal.
Yep, absolutely, yeah. And unfortunately, these brass lenses do go for quite a fair amount on eBay and KEH.
Yeah, but especially when you're looking like Taylor Hobb or Taylor Cook, stuff like
that. Yeah, the good stuff.
They really
yeah.
get up there.
Like this is the bargain basement of Petzval lenses that I have. Yeah.
And we're going to get some portraits of all of us here using the lens, and I'll also make sure to put up the wet plate that I did at PhotoStock.
That's one thing I really want to try is wet plate. That really looks like a lot of fun to do, but at the same time, I'm a little bit leery on the process right away after shooting, just having almost like a mobile darkroom.
Yeah, and that's essentially what you need to do. And the chemistry will land you on a lot of the Paris watch lists in both Canada and the United States, and it's very hard to obtain the chemistry here in Canada, and I'm hoping that we get a local wet plate photographer to agree for a interview, and we can discuss that a little more, probably for the September episode. Yeah,
it'd be really interesting,
and hopefully CSIS won't come knocking on the door.
It'd be really interesting if Jacques Brodeur in Quebec with Argentex, if he even, because I've seen him with some. The fact that he gets C41 chemistry, E6 chemistry in Canada, for someone a little more local instead of ordering from Beau Photo.
Yeah.
The fact that if he was getting in the wet plate stuff and tintype stuff, that would be really, really, actually really interesting. Because I'm not sure, does Freestyle, do they have
No.
Bostick and Sullivan might, but again,
Bostick and Sullivan would be your source of getting the wet plate chemistry, but you'll need to have a U.S. mailing address to get it, because there is silver nitrate, there is formaldehyde, there is ether. It is not not pleasant.
Ether. Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and also
gun
cyanide.
Cotton.
Oh nice.
Oh wow.
Nice. Yeah.
So at least four different ways of killing yourself or exploding things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hence the interest in law enforcement authorities.
But yeah, this is a great segue. Now, this was mentioned back in our episode on black and white chemistry, that one of the options out there is Caffeinol, which is something that you can brew in your own kitchen, and it's not that toxic to do.
But it is pretty toxic to smell.
Oh,
God. Oh, it's nasty smelling.
It's not that bad.
What sort of experience have you guys had with Caffeinol? Because I know I've done a lot with it. I've done some fairly scientific experiments on it.
Well, for me personally, I've used Caffeinol pretty extensively with Polypan. I've used it a bit with Orwo UN54, speaking of from our Red episode. And one of my favorite times for using it was actually Ilford SFX 200.
Okay.
I was floored at that one. That was interesting. It was from our box camera episode, actually. I used Ilford SFX 200 in my Agfa Sure shot and developed it in Caffeinol. It's just fantastic. I love the tonality. I've used it to develop prints. It takes a little bit longer,
yeah.
But the paper does take a little bit of the
sepia tone.
But I think
depending on the print that you want to pick for your pictures and stuff, I think it looks a lot nicer than...
Yeah, no, I mean, you can do sepia toning, which the chemicals can be a little bit foul-smelling and do have a little bit of toxicity to it.
Yep.
But if you're developing in Caffeinol for your prints, it's a pretty easy way of getting a sepia-toned print.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a little more brown towards the coffee side because, well, it's coffee than sepia-toned, but... it's absolutely gorgeous. I actually did a print for John because he gave me a roll of Adox CMS 20, and I did a print of one of the shots I took on. It was just a couple of abandoned shoes in a playground, and I developed it in Caffeinol. Now the really interesting thing is this was on RC paper, and even though it was on RC, it took the brown staining just beautifully.
Nice.
So it really, really made a good impression on me that day, as that was my first time using it for printing, and fantastic. I love the tone.
Personally, the film that I find takes Caffeinol quite nicely is Fujiacross 100. Now, I did an experiment called Strange Brew. That's actually what it's called.
Fitting.
There'll be a link to the post where I actually took... now, the thing with Caffeinol and what... The running thing is that the cheaper the instant coffee you use, the better it is. I actually found that the more expensive coffee, the espresso blend, did a much better job. Really good depth of tone in the image. Super sharp. Super, super sharp. But like I said, I did this proper scientific experiment. I got four rolls of Acros 100, all from the same batch. Shot them all within the same day along the same stretch of road, the Niagara Parkway, from Fort Erie to Niagara-on-the-Lake, Fort George. And just shot roll after roll after roll after roll, and then developed one in HC110 dilution B so that there'd be a baseline.
A control.
Right, a control, right? This is what it looks like in regular developer. And then I did one in cheap coffee, mid-range coffee, and the expensive one. And the interesting thing is that the cheap coffee and the really expensive coffee, when you smell the developer, terrible, terrible, terrible. The mid-range one, which did the worst job, smelt actually okay.
Nescafe?
Actually, I think that was the mid-range one.
Maxwell was the cheap one, and then
the Davidoff Espresso 57. So
I used Nescafe for one of my Nescafe is what I used, I believe, for the Ilford SFX. It did a half decent job, but of course, a 6x9 negative probably helped.
Yeah, that too. So yeah, it's definitely a fun way to do it. It's fairly an expensive way to develop film, but definitely not for everyday use, I would say. It's definitely a fun little side thing, something that you can do it yourself in your own home. If you have a lot of nosy kids or kids poking around, it's not going to kill them if they accidentally drink it. They might have an upset stomach, but that's about it.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I've seen is I've seen some amazing, amazing photos done with Caffeinol. Some people have used borax in it.
Yeah.
And the stuff that I've seen of them using borax, just the grain was pretty much non-existent.
I saw
an image of Polypan. It was done in a borax mix of Caffeinol, but there was no washing soda. It basically was used just all borax instead of washing soda, and quite literally no grain. I was so amazed at it.
Have to try that.
I've been really interested in trying it myself just to get an idea, but unfortunately the image that I saw, I can't remember where the link was. I saw it on Flickr. For the life of me, I wish I could find it. Maybe if I'll try to do a search and see if I can link it. But last I remember, I do not remember seeing his formula. He just mentioned about Caffeinol and borax, but no
soda. There's a website completely and totally dedicated to Caffeinol, because Caffeinol is infinitely modifiable. You can put limiters, you can put vitamin C, anything. You can do just straight up
contrast control.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Reinhold's blog, right? Kafenol.blogspot.com, I believe
I
it
think
is.
They have an actual domain. I'll make sure to put the link. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Reinhold's, his recipes that he's got on there, I swear by them. They're pretty much, as far as I'm concerned, the golden rule for Kafenol. He's got Kafenol C, Kafenol CM, Kafenol CCL, and ABCD, and
whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's definitely
obsessive compulsive disorder.
It's a great little developer, a little bit of fun. I hope to do a follow up to my blog, see out of all the available mid-range speed films, which one does Kafenol the best, comparing Akros 100 to FP4, Delta 100, and T-Max 100.
Oh, you know what? I've actually developed FP4 in Kafenol.
Okay.
Speaking of which, no, that stuff really takes to the Kafenol nicely.
Okay.
So you're good in for a real treat when you do that. But then again, it's FP4. You're in for a treat when you shoot FP4.
Well, another great show. Thank you all for joining us. Since we are at the midway point now, we are looking at to doing a second season of the podcast. So we want to hear from you. Shoot us an email, classiccamerarevival@gmail.com, or leave us a comment on our Facebook group, Classic Camera Revival, and let us know what sort of cameras you want us to review, if there's one you've been looking forward to, or just generally a style of camera. There's a good chance that we have something of that type in our collection. If not, we might be able to have a little bit of extra money laying around that we can go and pick up a copy of online. Or, if you really want to send us your camera, shoot us an email with your address and we'll tell you where to send it. Don't worry, we might send it. No, we will send it back. We really, really want it back. We're not that mean.
Oh, sorry, your Hasselblad you sent us, some weird reason, I don't know what happened. It got lost in the mail, I don't know.
Lost in Mike's basement.
We have, we're going to be taking a bit of a break next month. It's the summer vacation, but don't worry, there will still be a show. We're going to have some great roll-in pieces from Brussels in Belgium and Rochester, New York. So hopefully you tune in there and have yourself a great month.
It'll be alcohol-powered, so...
Keep on shooting.
Keep the film rolling.
Keep that coffee brewing.